Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. Welcome to my show, everybody. I hope you guys are all having a good week. As most of you guys know, my show is all about advocating for the disability community. On my show, I speak to you guys about the issues that impact individuals with disability. I also talk to you guys about acceptance, inclusion, diversity, and accessibility. But for today, I really want to focus on the history and the major events that shaped the disability rights movement. Because I feel that the disability rights movement was such an important movement for the disability community because it allowed individuals to have some freedoms and to finally have some equalities, but also to be seen by society as individuals who are able to contribute to society. So let's take a little bit of a history lesson. Let's start all the way back in the 1800s. So in the 1800s, people with disabilities were considered pitiful individuals, unfit and unable to contribute to society, except to serve as ridicule objects of entertainment in circuses and in exhibitions. They were assumed to be abnormal and feeble-minded. And numerous persons with disabilities were forced to undergo sterilization. But not only that, people with disabilities were also forced to enter institutions and asylums where most of them spent the rest of their lives. So that was the reality of individuals with disability in the 1800s. They were not seen as members of society. They were seen as unfit to be parents or to, procreate. So they were forced to have sterilization and they were forced into institutions where most of them spent their entire life. Not a good way to live for individuals with disability. But it wasn't until the mid-1900s that people with disability really began to push for the recognition of disability as an aspect of identity that influenced the experiences of an individual, not simply as the sole defining feature of a person. So in the mid-1900s, that's when the disability rights movement kind of began. And we can see it in 1934, where we saw the first disabled president of the United States with Franklin D. Roosevelt, who was in a wheelchair and who also advocated for the rehabilitation of people with disabilities. But it wasn't truly until after World War I and World War II that disability became more visible to the public. Because soldiers who became disabled after being in the wars started to demand rehabilitation and vocational training for their services. So they started to advocate for themselves for rehabilitation and for the rights to work because they deserve, after everything they did during the wars, they deserved it. But truly, the disability rights movement, which was heavily influenced by the civil rights movement of the 1960s, didn't really intensify until the years 1960s and the 1990s. So for those 30 years, that's when the disability rights movement really took off, because disability rights activists, they mobilized on the local level, demanding national initiatives to address the physical and social barrier facing the disability community. But also parents advocates were at the forefront demanding that their children be taken out of institutions and asylums and placed into schools where their children could have the opportunity to engage in society just like children who were not disabled. So it was truly during this time that disability rights activists started to mobilize and started to speak on behalf of the disability community. We truly see it in the 1960s with disability rights advocate Ed Roberts. So Ed Roberts was the pioneer of disability rights on campus, but also the founder of the independent living movement. So Ed Roberts contracted polio at the age of 14, which led him to become paralyzed from the neck down. He had to have an iron lung or a respirator to breathe. But in 1962, he was accepted to the University of California, Berkeley. But the university, which had been unaware of his disability when he applied, refused to admit him on the grounds that his iron lung or respirator to breathe would not fit in a dorm. So they actually rejected him because they did not have an accessible dormitory. And he was also considered unemployable by California's Department of Rehabilitation. So the school rejected him, and then the Department of Rehabilitation refused to pay for his education because they thought that he was unemployable. Of course, Ed Roberts challenged both administration, and he won, being admitted into the school and later becoming one of California's Department of Rehabilitation's director. But at the time, since there was no housing for disabled students at the University of Berkeley, students with disabilities lived in the Student Health Service Infirmary, which was a part of the Caldwell Hospital. So they had to live literally in a hospital on the Student's Health Service offices. Basically, that's where the students with disabilities lived in Berkeley in the 1960s. By 1967, Caldwell Hospital housed 12 students with disabilities. And by the next year, he became a formal program managed by the California Department of Rehabilitation. So these 12 students who live in Caldwell Hospital in the University of Berkeley, they later became known as the Rolling Quads. As the Rolling Quads, they protested the arbitrary restriction placed on them by the rehabilitation counselors of the Department of Rehabilitation, but they actually founded the first physically disabled student program in Berkeley. The program included provisions for personal assistance services, wheelchair repair, emergency attendant care, and help to obtain whatever financial services were available under the various state, federal, and social service rehabilitation programs. And in 1971, they established the first Center for Independent Living, which was an advocacy group that fought for changes that would give people with disabilities access to community life. The group's first success was its campaign to persuade the city of Berkeley to install curb cuts permitting wheelchair access. So that was the first campaign for accessibility for individuals in a wheelchair. So as you can see, the 1960s really began the disability rights movement. We were able to establish the first disabled student program on a university and also an advocacy group that fought for accessibility community level. I hope that you guys are enjoying this little piece of history. And on my next segment, we're going to talk about the 1970s. So stay tuned to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. Welcome back to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. On this segment, I'm going to talk about the key events that shaped the disability rights movement in the 1970s. In early 1970s, hundreds of disabled people advocated and protested the passage of the Rehabilitation Act, which was vetoed twice by President Nixon. Eventually, the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 was passed, and for the first time in history, there was a law that protected the civil rights of people with disability. But it wasn't over. On April 5th of 1977, on cities across the nation, hundreds of people, adults, teenagers, and parents with their children gathered in front of the regional offices of the Federal Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. These individuals, who were deaf, blind, living with mental disabilities, and living with paraplegia and quadriplegia, were protesting Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Section 504 mandated the integration of people with disability into mainstream institutions. But the section had a language that was broad, only noting that no qualified individual with a disability should only by reason of his or her disability be excluded from participating in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. So after many years of waiting for the federal government to implement guidelines as specific to Section 504, which provide access to public education, public transit, and public housing, disability rights activists began to organize nonviolent protests. Specifically in San Francisco, at the Office of Health, Education, and Welfare, about 100 disabled people occupied the regional office of the Federal Health, Education, and Welfare. And this landmark takeover, which lasted about 26 days, is the longest occupation of a federal building in U.S. history. So the disability community was able to occupy a federal building for 26 days. Obviously, inside the office, the need for accommodations for people with disability was amplified. Many people needed space for their walking aids and for their wheelchairs. Those who were deaf needed translator. Those who had paraplegia and quadriplegia needed assistance to turn and lift them when they were sleeping or sitting. But it didn't matter. Over the next few weeks, these individuals, you know, they compromised their health in order to achieve their goals of the government implementing guidelines for Section 504. And that was a huge achievement. And then the following year, in 1978, members of the Atlantis community started the We Will Write protest in Denver, Colorado. And this protest began when a bus on its route stopped to pick up passengers. Before the driver could leave, people in wheelchairs rolled in front of the bus. And then minutes later, when a second bus came in and stopped behind the first bus, another group of individuals in their wheelchairs stationed themselves behind the bus. So both buses were unable to move, and traffic in downtown Denver came to a standstill. The group, which was later known as the Gang of 19, because there were 19 of them, were protesting the lack of wheelchair lift and wheelchair accessible buses in the city of Denver. They blocked the intersection all day and all night, chanting their mantra, "We will ride." And they did that until representatives of the regional transportation district were willing to talk about the absence of wheelchair accessible buses. Eventually, they were able to achieve their goals of gaining wheelchair accessibility for all buses in Denver, and they sparked a nationwide movement aimed at equipping public transportation and facilities with ramps, elevators, and other modifications to accommodate people with disabilities. So these different events truly shaped the disability rights movement in the 1970s. In the occupation of the federal building, the disability community was able to show society what they were willing to do for their rights, to have access to public education, to public transportation, to public housing. They were willing to compromise their own health and to be subjected to these rudimentary accommodations inside the office in order to achieve their goals. And then in Denver in 1978, again, individuals with disabilities were also able to show what they were capable by staging a protest that blocked the intersection of a downtown Denver. I mean, they not only put their lives at risk for a day and a night, but they were willing to stay out there, you know, out in the open, chanting "We will ride," because they knew that they deserve the right to have wheelchair accessible buses in the city. So I think this events really speak volumes of the disability community, of what we are willing to go through, what we are willing to subject ourselves in order to achieve our goals of equality, accessibility, and inclusion. And from this events, the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, the occupation of the San Francisco Regional Office of the Federal Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and also the We Will Ride protest in Denver, really shaped the disability rights movement in the 1970s. And in my next segment, I'm going to talk about what events shaped the disability rights movement in the 1980s. So stay tuned for more at Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. This is Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. Let's continue our discussion about the disability rights movement. In previous segment, we spoke about the events that shaped the disability rights movement in the 1960s and in the 1970s. But in the 1980s, disability rights activists continued their fight for equality and inclusion in society. First, I want to tell you a little history fun fact. Do you guys know that in 1817, the American School for the Deaf in Hartford, Connecticut was the nation's first school for deaf children? That was in 1817. That was the first school for children who were deaf. But then later in 1857, the first Cromwell School for the Deaf and Blind was established in Washington, D.C. This school, which was then called Columbia Institution for the Instruction of the Deaf and Dumb and Blind, yes, that was the actual name of the school in 1857, taught and housed 12 deaf and 6 blind students. So the Columbia Institution for the Instruction of the Deaf, Dumb, and Blind was the first school for deaf and blind children in Washington, D.C. in 1857. It later became a college, and then in 1986, it became Gallaudet University. Gallaudet University is the first and only university for the deaf and hard of hearing in the United States. In 1888, the university was involved in a protest that majorly impacted the disability community and the disability rights movement. In March of 1988, the university's board of trustees announced that a hearing person had been selected as Gallaudet's 7th president, despite the fact that two of the other finalists were deaf. In the months leading up to the decision, many of the deaf community and on campus had advocated for a deaf person to become president of the university. Because, after all, by then, there were more than 100 deaf people with doctorates and many more who held administrative positions at the university. But despite the fact that two of the three finalists were deaf, the university board of trustees still decided to select a hearing person to become the 7th president of Gallaudet University. Unhappy with this decision, Gallaudet students, backed by a number of alumni, staff, and faculty, shut down the campus, and this week-long protest and activism came to be known in U.S. history as the Deaf President Now. So this protest, which lasted a whole week, came to be known, like I said, in U.S. history as the Deaf President Now. Throughout the week, more than 1,000 students, including elementary and high school students from the university pre-college program, and staff and faculty and members of the local deaf community, participated in rallies. They boycotted classes. They marched on Capitol Hill. They had speeches. They wrote campaign letters to the university's board of trustees and to local businesses, to the state senators and representatives. By midweek, the protest had gained a national attention, and they were on TV and on newspaper all across the nation, because, you know, they have 4 demands. So the Gallaudet students, they have 4 demands in their protest, and the first one was that the current and chosen president step down and a deaf president be chosen as the president. The second demand was for the current Board of Trustee chairperson to resign. The third was that a 51% death majority on the board. And four and last, that no reprisals against protesters. So no, no reprisals against protesters. Eventually, after about 8 days, on March 13th of 1988, Dr. I. King Jordan was named the 8th president and first deaf president of Gallaudet University. So that was a huge accomplishment for the deaf community, because that was the first time in Gallaudet history that a deaf president had been selected in their, I think, 125 years of the university or the school, because first it was a grammar school, then it was a college, and then a university, and they had never had a deaf president. The campus community, they really rallied together. Like I said, they marched, they boycotted classes, they marched on Capitol Hill, they wrote letters to their state representatives and senators. They were able to peacefully protest, and not violent protest, what they wanted. And they wanted a deaf president now. They felt that it was time for the university, which is the first and only university for deaf and hard of hearing in the United States, to have a deaf president. It was truly one of the first times for the reporters and for the viewers alike to see for themselves that deaf students and deaf people really could do anything except hear. At the same time, I feel that the movement was a strong reminder to deaf and hard of hearing people that they did not have to accept the limitations put on them by society. The deaf community really realized what they were capable of doing, what they were capable of achieving. And like I said, this protest allowed the whole nation to see what deaf people and hard of hearing people are able to do. They are able to do whatever they want. The only thing that they can't do is hear. I'm hard of hearing. I wear hearing aids, and sometimes I do struggle to hear and understand people because of my hearing, but that doesn't mean that I'm not able to do normal activities and things just like anybody else. Like I said, this protest really showed the nation what the deaf community is able to do, and it has sparked many legislation in favor of deaf and hard of hearing individuals. And it also began the Deaf Month, Deaf History Month. And it really, this whole movement, this whole week-long movement really shaped the disability rights movement. He gave it some added credibility, and not just credibility, but he gave the individuals fighting for their rights and for equality a sense that they were united together. Despite not having the same disability, they were still fighting for equality, for acceptance, and for inclusion. And it really helped move more legislation in favor of the disability community, which I will tell you about on my next segment. So please stay tuned for more on Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominica.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. Welcome back to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. Today, I have been telling all of you guys about the disability rights movement. This movement was incredibly important for the disability community. During this movement, individuals with disabilities became their own advocates. They advocated for the rights to independence, to freedom, and to equality in a society that often saw them as pitiful individuals who were unfit and unable to contribute and to be active members of society. There are many events greatly shaped the disability rights movement. In the 1960s, we saw how students at Berkeley University established the first disabled student program and also the first Center for Independent Living. In the 1970s, we saw disability rights activists advocate and protest for the passage of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Also in 1977, we saw how individuals with disabilities protested and occupied the federal building of the Department of Health and Education and Welfare in San Francisco to protest the implementation of Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. The following year, in 1978, we also saw how members of the Atlantis community organized the We Will Ride protest. This protest was in favor of more wheelchair lifts and wheelchair accessible buses in the city of Denver, Colorado. And then in 1988, at Gallaudet University, the first and only liberal arts university in the United States for the deaf and hard of hearing, we also saw how students organized the Deaf President Now in favor of the first deaf president of the university. These events greatly shaped the disability rights movement. These events also led to the biggest legislation in favor of the disability community. In the winter of 1990, when congressional legislation to turn a proposed Americans with Disabilities Act was stalled in the House Committee of Public Works and Transportation, we saw how hundreds of individuals with disability descended upon Washington, D.C. The most memorable day for the disability rights movement happened on March 12 of 1990, when dozens of the protesters on Capitol Hill abandoned their mobility aids such as wheelchairs and walkers and began to climb and crawl up the steps to the top of the West Capitol entrance on the National Mall. Some of these individuals were climbing on their own. Others got help from family and friends. The Capitol Crawl, as it was later known, was intended to openly illustrate the struggles that people in the disability community face and also to spur Congress to pass the ADA. If you guys search the Capitol Crawl on Google, the images will just amaze you guys, because it's incredibly moving and touching to see dozens of individuals with disabilities crawling and climbing the steps of the Capitol. One of the protesters was actually an 8-year-old girl with cerebral palsy. She was the youngest, the only child and the only child to crawl the steps of the Capitol on that day. And the images, like I said, are incredible. So I really recommend that you guys Google it. Because after all, after decades of campaigning and lobbying, the Americans with Disability Act finally passed in the summer of 1990. And this legislation was incredibly important for the disability community. It was a huge win because it ensured the equal treatment and equal access to people with disabilities to employment opportunities and to public accommodations. The ADA is intended to prohibit the discrimination on the basis of disability in employment, service rendered by state and local governments in places of public accommodations, transportation, and in telecommunications services. Under the ADA, all businesses are mandated to provide reasonable accommodations to people with disability, such as at work, in public transportation, public housing, and any place that is open to the public has to have accommodation thanks to the ADA. But I think the biggest win that came from the Americans with Disability Act is that with this legislation, the U.S. government finally identified the full participation, inclusion, and integration of people with disabilities in all levels of society. So for the first time, the U.S. government was accepting individuals with disability. They were saying, you guys matter and you guys are part of our society. You guys are able or allowed to, you guys have a right to fully participate in our society and to, you guys have a right to all access and accommodation. Together with the march and the crawl, it comprised one of the largest disability direct actions today. So that was the biggest direct action from the disability community in U.S. history. Like I said, if you guys research all this event that I have just told you guys about in this episode, the We Will Riot protest, Death President protest, the Capitol crawl, you guys will see the amazing work that individuals with disability did in order for many individuals with disability to be able to have access to accommodations in public places such as transportation, housing, work, and many businesses, and also in school. Obviously, the disability rights movement has many other incredible moments. I wish that I could tell you guys about all of them, but I don't have time, unfortunately. But I just wanted to really highlight some of the key moments that greatly impacted the disability rights movement and that really shaped it. Because some of these protests and events, they really, you know, help in passing many legislation in favor of individuals with disability, but they all also led to the Americans with Disability Act, which, as we all know, the ADA is the biggest legislation in favor of individuals with disability. And like I said, if you guys research and Google all this event, you guys will be completely amazed and blown away. And I hope that you enjoy listening to some of the history behind the disability rights movement. It is a movement of resilience, of courage, of perseverance, of individuals who weren't afraid to fight for their rights to an equal and independent life. I am incredibly grateful to all those amazing individuals who paved the way for all this legislation, but also for all individuals with disability to be able to have a voice and to have rights and to be able to look back and see that they were able to accomplish so much and that we are able to accomplish so much because of them. Thank you for listening to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare.